That's for why you. Reuven, have you read my seventh book, Washington? I brought the Bronx back to life.
I know. From Washington Avenue to Washington Street.
Right. When the book was launched, there were the greatest speakers in the world, Yosef Atzadik Mendelovich, Tova Lichtenstein. No one paid attention. All they were talking about was the Bronx. Follow? For better or for worse.
I refer to the Bronx as Olivar Shalom.
Say the good came out of the Bronx. People don't realize that.
The Hasidim say, take the nitzotzot out of Mitzrayim. I commented to my wife, Baruch Hashem, you and I are not youngsters. You're still teaching and writing and doing good things.
I'm working harder than ever.
It's wonderful.
But you have to make peace with your limitations. I don't have the energy. All my class, my two shirim are in the morning in verse. I switch from the afternoon because I have more energy in the morning. And Baruch Hashem, I have enough. God has to keep me alive. I have material for no one else has. It hurts me to think. I got to get it out of me.
Good.
You know, I'm ongoing. I have Talmidim who are with me 30 years, 20 years. Yitz Rubin's with me 20 years. I think we can begin.
I may have Yisrim. Aaron, you should be well and continue doing wonderful things.
May have Yisrim, the Mayor Ke'esrim.
Like Sarah,
exactly. All right, I just want to take a minute to introduce myself. I asked for no formal introduction. As I just mentioned a minute ago, I don't like to hear eulogies, at least not yet. But I would introduce myself to say, here is a kid from the Bronx who took the message of the Yeshiva University, to a certain degree Lakewood, what I was exposed to, took their message seriously, and B'nai Akiva's message seriously. And I would say for the last 75, almost 80 years, I'm leaving out when I was a little kid, I've lived with one aphorism that guided me. Eretz Yisrael, La'am Yisrael, Al Pi Torah Yisrael.
Can you talk a little louder, please?
Is it better now? The microphone is closer. Okay. We're here tonight to launch my ninth volume in print, and this is the fourth volume of the series Rakafat Aharoma. There are four divisions to this book. It's a little bit different than anything else I ever published. The book is entitled Timeless Halacha and Contemporary History. The first section is a continuation of Volume 3. It's entirely halacha, deals with Kedushin, Hafkat Kedushin. To quote my dear student, Professor Mori Tarigan, you can't read the first part of the book standing up. You have to be seated, and Lehit Rakeiz. The first part, the first draft, was made from my lectures, yutorah.org, by my dear student who's in Princeton, lives in East Brunswick, Rabbi Dr. Yaakov Weinstein, and he's not here tonight, but I want to thank him publicly. The second section is a continuation of my seventh book with what Malka and I were privileged to do in Russia, working for the Mossad and all that goes with it. I leave that for another time. The third section is some contemporary scholarship that I've published in the last 20 years, essentially dealing with the Rav. Some of the articles were cited and recited, the one of the Rav and the Rebbe, the one of the Rav and Professor Lieberman. I also have some pieces on my Madritin B'nai Akiva, Meir Kahana. And I, you know, want to tell you in advance, it's not that I agree with everything of Meir. Those of you who listen to my shirim know that at times I let off steam in class where I agree, disagree. But what hurts me is how everyone sees only evil in Meir. And Malka and I will both testify, and my brother is sitting here as well. We're probably sitting here in Israel. One of the main reasons is Meir Kahana. So he was a very inspiring madrich, and his life was not easy. Again, I can explain to you what this man suffered from. Five of his closest relatives were killed by Arab terrorists in 1937. And later in life, thrown out of his shul because he was making the kids too frum as rabbi, and that impacted on his personality, but we'll leave that for another time. What I do want to talk about tonight is the fourth part of the book, which if you look at it, it appears very simplistic. Rakefet did a nice thing. He published some documents. The fourth part is entitled Documents and Pictures, all dealing with Yeshiva University. The truth of the matter is that these documents, they reveal a basic Weltanschein of Torah, Hashkafa, who we are, where we're at, and what we should be. And that's what I want to talk about. There's one picture, it's here, it's small, and two more, in the next page it's quite large. This picture is the picture of the Rav teaching. It became the quintessential picture of Mori Urebi teaching, why he uses it all the time. It happens that this picture is my class. When I say my class, again, when you studied with the Rav, you were with him 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, but it's my era. I was able to date the picture because there's one student in here who only studied with the Rav 1 year. And that told me right away this picture is 1960. About 5 years ago, I started to try to identify everybody in the picture. Now, it's not just faces. Many people, all you see are their backs, their hands, the Rav's hand totally covers that person, and trying to identify them became a challenge. And Baruch Hashem, about a year ago, I had 27 out of the 29 students. And boy, that bothered me to be close, so close to the finish line, and not there. So I sent an email to one of the people in the picture, teaches at Stern College, my classmate Saul Berman, and I asked Saul, who's in front of you? And he gave me the wrong name, but he said, another person who all you see is his nose, that's my brother-in-law Ray Weinberg. So we blew the picture up 200 times, and Malk and I both knew Ray well, and we said, yes, that is Ray Weinberg. The person, now I have 28 out of 29, and I can't get anywhere. Malka notices he's wearing a bow tie. And Malka said to me, look at your college yearbook, who wore bow ties? And I opened the college yearbook, and one colleague of mine wore a bow tie all the time, Izzy Wind. Yisrael Wind. And then it all came back to me, that's just where he sat. I had 29 out of 29, what I'm about to tell you, those of you who are Stulitvaken, close your ears. Izzy came to me in a dream. It was so real. He said, Ani, thank you for bringing me back to life. Came from the other world to thank me for identifying him. I see some Bostonians here. Chaim Soloveitchik couldn't believe. He said, how did you identify him? My father blocks his face. And I, Baruch Hashem, that bow tie gave it away. All right, now we have 29 students identified. Who are they? Anyone here who wants to be enterprising and become world famous, take off a few years, research what happened to these 29 people. You'll have a fabulous volume, The Class of 1960 Revisited. The OU will be overjoyed to publish it. I can assure you in advance, the sales will be fabulous. But then you're going to notice something. Who are these students? So I'm going to pick three. Three who went on to become very famous. Scholars. so different in Hashgacha. Abba Braunschweiger, Rabbi Braunschweiger, anyone here study with Abba? I grew up in the Bronx with him. Abba Braunschweiger, I have a student from Beit Shemesh, it's his Talmud, Mark Watson is a Talmud of Rabbi Abba. Abba Braunschweiger was a survivor. His native language was Yiddish. He went through the hell of the Holocaust. He was small. The years he should have been eating, he was starving. The third Gerer Rebbe, the Reim, Rabbi Avraham Mordechai Alter, used to stand up for his grandfather. When his grandfather walked into the room, the Reim stood up for him. He was the third Rebbe, the Sfat Emes' son. He was his Melamed Dadaki. He's the one who taught the Sfat Emet Aleph Bet, Chumash, Mishnah. This is from them in Abba had gestampt. We grew up together in the Bronx. And he comes, studies with the Rav many years, goes on to become a Rosh Yeshiva. He leaves YU in anger. He's the first Rosh Yeshiva of Landa College. YU is not frum enough. And I can still remember, without going to more, I met him on the streets of Borough Park. I was in visiting America. He says to me, Arnie, come into my house. I got it. He takes out a book by the president of YU at the time, my dear friend, and Refu Shlomo, Rabbi Dr. Norman Nachum Lamb, and he has lines underlined. Do you agree with this? Uppy courses. Abba Braunschweiger, absolutely a fine example of a YU product, right wing. Then you take the person sitting opposite me. By the way, everyone asked me, how did you identify? I identified myself. That's no big deal. I knew where I sat. But here, all I have is an arm. That arm is Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. Ah, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. When I mention the name, we should all stand up. He sat opposite me, so it's not hard to identify Reb Aaron. Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, I think you all have to agree, he's the epitome, the golden standard of Torim Derech Eretz, Torim Mada, centrist YU, whatever you want to call it, right or wrong, Rabbi Lichtenstein, PhD, Harvard, English Literature, those of you familiar with his Hashkafa lectures, the man, he and Rabbi Yehuda Amital, the biggest heads the yeshiva in the state of Israel today. And that's Rabbi Aaron, certainly the godfather of modern orthodoxy or centrist orthodoxy in our generation. Then you see another person there who I just mentioned his name, Saul Berman, Rabbi Dr. Saul Berman. Some of you might have had him as a teacher at Stern College. And Saul Berman, I heard a lecture of his out of the 70s, recorded lecture. Wow, already then, he was leading the way for what ultimately led to Chovevei Torah. So Saul Berman, if you want to talk about left-wing orthodoxy, Chovevei Torah orthodoxy, Shira Chadasha orthodoxy, so I would say Saul Berman certainly qualifies as a leading example of YU to the left. But now, this begs a very important question. Who was the Rav? Mori Urebi here. 29 students. By the way, they're more in the classroom. The picture only catches 29. But on the other side, if you see, those of you who remember the room, you'll see the angle that the picture was taken. Chaim Soloveitchik is at the other side. There must be at least 10 others that were sitting and are not caught by this camera, circa 1960. That could be today's cameras if they can get 6,000 Chabad Shluchim into one picture. So it could be today they could get a classroom of 35. But you have to ask, they're all sitting here, but the Chilu Rechimu. You'll talk to Abba Braunschweiger, my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. You'll talk to Rabbi Lichtenstein, Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. I always get mad at students or people who say about Rav Aaron, he's Rabbi Soloveitchik's son-in-law, as if to say that made him famous. Idiot! He was Rav Aaron Lichtenstein long before he became the Rav son-in-law. He's a Gaon Adil. He was a kid of 13 when I met him the first time. I still shake. He was a teenager. The man's knowledge was unbelievable at that time already, 1951. But Rav Aaron... And then you take Saul Berman, Marie Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, Eidal. You remember what went on here? There was a convention in the 90s, a big picture of the Rav. All right, Tova Lichtenstein was hysterical. Dr. Tova Lichtenstein, Tova Soloveitchik Lichtenstein raised the roof with them for using her father's picture to espouse what ultimately leads to Chovevei Torah. But they're all sitting there with such derech eretz. They're Rebbe. Who is the Rav? And here, for the first time, I fell down to this document, and this is the first time I'm going to quote it publicly. I have a lot of students today. We all have to thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for the computer. I know some people demonstrate against the computer. Millions of dollars were spent renting Citi Field. If anyone wants to demonstrate against anything, we should demonstrate against automobiles. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people have been killed by automobiles. Trying to park a car in modern-day Israel is enough to take 10 years off your life. V'hamevin tavin. So I would love to demonstrate, outlaw all cars. But there's good and bad in life. And the computer, all right, we have to educate over chata b'chayim to choose the good. The Torah, what's available on the computer, is beyond words, yutorah.org. It impacts on my life every day. Some of you know I'm at Chris right after davening, 6:15, 6:20. Devote at least 2 hours answering questions that come in from all over the world as a result of my shiurim. And it's just unbelievable what you can pick up. And I have many students that I've never met, but they relate to me as a Rebbe Muvhak. So I want to thank Michael Feldstein. I don't believe we ever met. And he sent this to me and typed it out from the handwriting. What I'm holding in my hand, this is the Rav's handwriting, 100%. If anyone's here from Boston, you can come up and validate it. There's his signature, Tziv Soloveitchik. And this letter, unbelievably fascinating, from 1966, it's to Yitzchak Greenberg. I need not tell you who Rabbi Dr. Yitzchak Greenberg is. By the way, I taught 5 out of his 5 children. One, Lo Aleinu, was killed in an accident here in Israel. Sad. J.J. Zichrono Livracha. I taught all the others, taught J.J. And, well, you know, Yitzchak Greenberg moved very, very left. And 66, the ecumenical conference was held, the Pope, ecumenicism, a new word that we learned then, and the Rav was very much upset and totally opposed to going to the Vatican and being involved. Remember, he wrote a whole article, Confrontation, appeared in Tradition, that we can all be friends on social, economic issues, but when it comes to religion, we come from different religions, and we cannot talk with each other. We can respect each other, but these are 2 different religions. Yitzchak Greenberg went to the ecumenical conference, did not listen to the Rav. By the way, the Rav was not his Rebbe. The world makes a mistake, and they blame YU for Yitzchak Greenberg. Yitzchak Greenberg smicher is from Nevadik Yeshiva in Borough Park. So if you want to blame anyone, blame Nevadik Yeshiva. Malk and I were just on it this past summer. We had a unique experience that put us in Ripley's Believe It or Not. We were honored by Lakewood and 770, 6 days apart. I stress the 6 days. You shouldn't think we changed Hashkafa. But in Lakewood, you know, my talk and the questions, so we got to David Hartman. So I told them we share the blame equally. I said there are four of us involved with Davi Hartman, his elementary school, Chabad, Chaim Berlin High School, Lakewood, his most formative years, and then when he got married and needed Panasa, he went to YU to get smicha and went into the rabbinate. So Lakewood plays a share with Hartman, and Nevada plays a big share with Yitz Greenberg. So Yitz Greenberg went, and he wrote a letter to the Rav apologizing. I hope, I don't have the letter, we don't have a copy of it, but evidently he wrote, "Dear Rebbe, I hope you're not angry at me, but I felt I should go." And here's the Rav's answer. I'm reading from the printed copy of his handwriting. "I acknowledge receipt of your letter. Thank you for your good wishes. Please accept my greetings, etc., for the new year. There is absolutely no need of apologies or explanations. You are certainly entitled to your opinion as much as I am to mine. I have never demanded conformity or compliance, even from my children. I believe in freedom of opinion and freedom of action. When you consulted me about your participation, all I said, which I addressed not to you but to myself, was in the form of hesitant advice. In fact, I spoke in the first person, namely, if I were invited, I would not accept. I did not instruct, nor did I try to convince you, since you have made up your mind in accordance with your own view. All I can say to you is Alei v'hatzlach. Go and may God be with you." That is an unbelievably powerful letter. It's 1966, sure it's dated. I can tell you the exact date. The Rav wrote on the letter, Yom Gimel, Yud Gimel Tishrei, Tashkaf, 1966. This is a very powerful letter, and this explains to you the eulogy in Jewish Observer when Moreinu v'Rabbeinu passed on in 93. Some of you may remember. Unfortunately, I have a good memory for these matters. Halavai would remember all of Shas and Paiskim that I'd learned the way I remember all the side issues. Jewish Observer wrote a terrible eulogy for the Rav. They acknowledged the Nadam Gadol, but they criticized him that unlike the Torah world where we raise students who think alike and act alike, the Rav students, every type, so different, they saw this critically. And here you come to the heart of a basic chasm, a basic cleavage that exists between the world I grew up in and the world I live in, and the message I give, and the so-called right wing today. Torah education, you walk into Lakewood, you walk into Mir, walk into Panovich, not so much in Yeshiva University today, but it's there. Everyone wears a uniform. Everyone looks alike. Black pants, white shirt, black hat. Rosh Yeshiva gives shiurim with their hats on. It hurts me, because if I put my hat on, it means I'm anxious to leave. And that's a terrible way to give a shiur. You're leaving a message that hop-lop, pop-lop, in and out. No, I remember Myra Bayim came in, Rabbi Lipschitz, Rabbi David, was a whole ceremony when he took off his hat and put on a Yerupayisha yarmulke, was a whole ceremony. The Rav, you never saw him teach with a hat. It was unheard of. But all right, this is a world that has gone Hasidic. Willy-nilly, the Hasidim have conquered the world. We have to be honest. What is Hasidus? Please tell them to be quiet out there or close the door. When a person my age gives a share at night, this is an achievement. And I want to acknowledge the presence of a number of grandchildren here, which greatly makes me rejoice. And I look forward to one time this year when some of my great-grandchildren will be present as well. That's Rat Hashem. You see, what is Chassidus? Want to live in a ghetto? Want to protect yourself? Does the ghetto work today? Perhaps yes, perhaps no. But Chassidus invented a portable ghetto. You dress black, payas, beard, strangel on Shabbos. You're going to remain a Jew. It's a fabulous concept. It's a portable ghetto. That took over the yeshiva world. By the 1980s, the 1990s, 1920s. So one wise guy once said to me, but in your world, everyone wears a kippah srugah. Correct. Show me two kippah srugah that are the same. I see here kippah srugah. I don't see one looking like my kippah srugah. All right. Could be we need the portable ghetto. I don't need it. I'm a litvak. I'm in a world. Give me a Gemara, and believe me, I can survive Meo Tzitang doing a horror with me. But, nothing so funny, just a statement of fact. The Rav, you see, he was very different. He could not handle this sameness. People are different. The Rav's life, there were major changes. The Rav always quoted Reb Chaim, Reb Chaim, Reb Chaim. We grew up with the Rav. Reb Chaim was a living personage in the shir, in the room, in our lives. My two volumes on the Rav, studied them. Reb Chaim. On the other hand, look how different the Rav was. Reb Chaim was totally opposed to Zionism, like the Satmar Rav. Totally opposed to Agudat Yisrael. Totally opposed. Not now can I go into details, but it's overwhelming, Reb Chaim's insight against Agudat Yisrael. He hit the nail on the head, by the way, because all that's going on here today, if you know Israeli politics, goes back to the Gerer Rebbe and what happened after the last election. It's earth-shaking. Buses are running on Shabbos because of... Don't want to finish the sentence. God have mercy. I don't sleep at night. Buses run on Shabbos. Read Nach, what happened to the Jewish people. Idol worship. What does idol worship mean? There's no God. Buses running on Shabbos means there's no God. There's no Kiddush. There's no acknowledgement. There's no one above us. There's no continuity. God have mercy on us. Democracy? No, we're not a democracy. We're a Jewish state first. Democracy means do what you want. I do. You go to shul. I can eat chazer on Yom Kippur. Fine. Freedom of choice, but not on the public thoroughfare. It has to be a Jewish state. Underline the word Jewish. God have mercy. But Reb Chaim, the Rav, there wasn't a bigger religious Zionist in modern times. Every kid growing up in Israel who has a proper education is raised on the Kol Dodido fake. My own grandchildren quoted. They don't believe. Malka and I were there in the audience in 56 when the Rav gave that talk. So you see, the Rav, and you can go on and on if you analyze Rebbe's writings, his leadership, his message, freedom of choice. The bottom line was, Mindaf Karen learning. You got to know how to learn. But you want to be a Chassid, you want to be a Litvak, you want to be a German Orthodox Jew, total freedom of choice. And here, there's this split, this breach between Mori Rebbe and the world of the Jewish observer. At that time, it could be today, due to many sociological factors, the Haredi world is starting to open, and we are needed more than ever to set the stage for them, to help them, to show them that one can be a giant of Torah, a giant of Yirat Shemayim, and we could successfully in the Western world, particularly in the state of Israel. This must happen, because all statistics and all analyses show within 30, 40 years, the majority of the state will be Haredim. Take a look at the education, the chinuch, the figures, the statistics. Look what's happened to Jerusalem. We came to 50 years ago. Who can believe what we have today? Those of you that are old timers, who could believe Jerusalem, Teddy Kolak? My first year here, I remember 69, Simchas Torah, and I'm walking back from Meir Sharim, walking back to Rechavia, the Merkaz Klita, and I'm walking on Rehov Rashba, and there is the mayor of Jerusalem, I believe it was, you can check it, count that name, was Shmiret Tzer, Simchas Torah, and Shabbos all together. It's not 69, it's 1970. And there's the mayor driving his car on Shabbos, Rehov Rashba. I can still show you the house in which he lived. So, we have to help. But to me, the Rav's message is unbelievably powerful. And I'll tell a true story here to bring it home. It's written up, I believe, in my work on called Washington. I was walking down Rehov Strauss. I believe it was Cholomayed Sukkos. And I'm walking with a YU graduate. He's no longer alive. I don't want to mention his name. Nothing derogatory. But he was a YU graduate, a YU Musmach, who believed that the world begins and ends with Yeshiva University. And here we are. We were walking, by the way, we were coming from Shvat Ami, from the Shvat Ami office. Remember, he was the executive director. And we're walking down Strauss. And there's a fella coming up the street in a Bekesher, a Shtreimel, Cholomayed, long beard, and he sees me and he runs and hugs me. Shalom Aleichem, Mori, Rebbe, Chagim Uzmanim L'Sason, Mardim L'Simcha, and we walk away afterwards. How are you? I speak, it's my Talmud. And this rabbi says to me, Ani, how could you feel so miserably to have Talmidim like that? And I said to him, you idiot. You should compliment me that I have Talmidim in the Eidei Haredim who acknowledge their Rebbe who put them on the path to Torah. And that's an absolute true story, and I can tell you who the person is. You all know him. It's Marty Flummenbaum, the sofa, who used to be in the OU building. Remember going back a number of years? Marty Flummenbaum. So this picture to me says everything about my Rebbe, and this message is one that has inspired me for the last 61 years of being privileged to teach Torah Hashem Tamima. Number one. Number two, here's a picture of the 1944 Reitz faculty. With all the names. Alright, you look at it, you say, thank you, Rakefet, you did us a favor. There is so much to this picture. And let me tell the story. And let me have the mitzvah of being Mechayeh HaMaisim. Tell me, how many of you are Olim Chadashim? Do you know what it was like 50 years ago? Today you have an OU center. Today you can live in Israel. My mother lived here, Zichrona Livracha, maybe 30, 40, how many years did Mommy live here? 30 years plus. She never learned how to speak Hebrew. Who has to learn how to speak Hebrew? You have endless classes in English. It's unbelievable. What? You know what banks were like 50 years ago? Do you know that they have that contest at the bus stops? How many pregnant women you could knock over running to catch a bus? No, remember what it was like? Remember, I once told the manager of my local discount bank, why don't you put a rope in and let people stand in line? Zalo yeleichkan. That was his answer. Today. But even today, when you come in Aliyah, there's so much adjustment to make. So much adjustment. The food. the manners of the people, riding on an Israeli bus, so many conversations, everyone talking to their boyfriends on the iPads, schooling here, the relationship, student, teacher, the sports. Where's baseball today? Soccer? So many adjustments. Just think. Think what it's like if you're a refugee running away from Hitler and you find yourself in a strange world, a strange country, not like Israel. Israel is a land of immigrants. There are very few people here who came on the Mayflower. And the country is built, all of you know, at a time of stress, the friendship, what goes on here. I can tell you endless stories. People injured in battle, in the hospital. There was one little experience, a whole group of El Al people, stewardesses and others, came to visit the soldiers. So one of the soldiers says to them, oh, El Al sent you? And they say, no, our flight was canceled and we wanted to do something good. Women came around with food. A lady I know says to the woman distributing the food, what restaurant is it from? Svadik woman, big pot of rice, Svadik treats. And she was embarrassed, insulted. No, what, you're asking about the kashrut? This is from my house? And she listed out all the Svadik Rabbanim who eat in her house. And it's the greatest country in the world, but you have to know, sometimes it's a sabra, and it's a little bit sharp on the outside. But imagine what it's like coming to America, a greenhorn, Minderet no Yiddish, you were a giant of Torah in Europe, here, Minkut Daichan, and everyone laughs at you. Who are you? What are you? So there was a person that Rabbi Revel saved in the late 30s, Rav Shmuel Lezavok. He was a Talmud of Telz. He was a Chavrut of the Telz Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Azriel, the son of the Telz Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Chaim Rabinovich's son, Rav Azriel, who later was killed by Hitler, Hashem Yikom Damo. And Revel saved him. He came to Baltimore. He wasn't married. He taught for a year in Baltimore. They brought him uptown to New York. And he was my Rebbe right before Rav Soloveitchik. Many, perhaps there are people sitting here who studied with him. Agadol sheb gedolim. But who appreciated him? You know, he had a greenhorn. I used to pay his shirt. It wasn't the Rav with a PhD from Berlin who spoke English that none of us understood and taught us words in English, cathartic, willy-nilly. I can go on and give you a whole list, eschatological, a whole list of words I learned from Rebbe. And it was hard for him. The hardest part of the yeshiva is when the Rebbeim switched to English. And that's a separate talk. I happen to be an eyewitness, an ear witness of the person that put the rub against the wall and forced them to switch from Yiddish to English. All right, by the time the 60s, the late 60s, when I went to yeshiva, every kid knew Yiddish because either you were a survivor or you grew up in a home of parents who ran away from Hitler in the 30s and Geret Yiddish and Shtub. Well, you're a kid like me, a third-generation American who didn't know a word of Yiddish. In seventh grade, my Rebbeim come in from Shanghai, and they didn't know a word of English. And I tell you, I'm sitting here because of Semple Sugihara, Seichet Tzadik Levracha. And it was swim or sink. Some kids sank. I made up my mind, and the greatest gift that I had when I worked for the Mossad, when Malka and I worked for the Mossad in Russia, was our fluency in Yiddish. Because in the 1980s, any Russian 40 years or older, his native language, Lev, was Yiddish. Any Russian 40 years or older, his native language was Yiddish. And what a gift. Now the Rav is in English, everyone is in English, Rav David Lifshitz made the adjustment beautifully, who shall not be Ivrit? So Reb David, who kvali made it, that talmidim biyavrit, that talmidim chasru mikan, kvach haita kvutza shlema, she shaltu biyavrit. But Rav Volk was having trouble. And then he took ill, and the yeshiva retired him. He had heart trouble. But by the early 70s, this already happened, we were living here. By the early 70s, they could do miracles with heart trouble. And he recovered. And then he came to the yeshiva, and he wanted to come back to teach. And the yeshiva said to him, Sisnuchta Plapsfeich, the Tamidim Hein Fashtenish Kan Yiddish. They said, you're of retirement age. He went to labor court, and he lost. And he became very bitter against the yeshiva. He moved to Florida. Thank God his children succeeded in life, and he was able to publish Sfarim, Sharei Torah. And when you read the sixth and seventh volumes, the introductions of Sharei Torah, Tohar, he's very bitter against the yeshiva. And he writes, don't want to quote, not such nice things about Reb Shmuel Belkin, Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, the new president, Reb Nachum Lam. So over the years, yeshiva decided, this man is in Chayrim, he doesn't exist, and in all the yeshiva publications, his name is never mentioned. The ultimate insult, whenever the yeshiva publishes this picture, it gives everyone's name, and one name it says, unidentified. So I saw this picture upstairs in the Gris office, and it hurt me. It was my Rebbe, and Medav Habim Rachmanis. The Zohar says, Hakol Tolui B'mazel, Afilu Sefer Torah Shebeheichal. And I translate that, it means, what does mazel mean? To be the right person in the right place at the right time. Not everyone has mazel. I've seen people who are idiots, but they're in the right place at the right time. And I've seen people who are giants, and they don't have mazel. They're never in the right place. And to me, it troubled me. It troubled me what they did to Rav Volk. We have to be big enough. We who succeeded. Look the other way. I'm not saying this is an example to follow. He was a character. He was Reb Shmuel Lezer Volk. He was a telger. He once was saying over in class, Reb Chaim, Reb Chaim, and I hope you people all know Yiddish, and it cooked me run. Rotkov, v'meinich Reb Chaim. And I'm an idiot kid, I say, Rebbe, du meinst die, meint Reb Chaim Briska, Reb Chaim, Rechas, v'chalilech, mein Reb Chaim Telger, Reb Chaim Rabinovich. Took me 40 years of learning to understand the difference between Reb Chaim Briska and Reb Chaim Rabinovich, but I got there finally. But I'm very proud to say he is identified in this picture. Then I want to go a step further. We live in a world where the swing to the right ultimately reaches proportions of total anti-Torah understanding. I give you many examples. A simple example, I saw a picture a few months ago that takes my sleep away. The Chafetz Chaim is, it's a very famous picture. I know the picture, I see it right in front of me. The Chafetz Chaim is talking to his son and his wife. It's his second wife, the mother of the son. It's Mendel Zaks's mother-in-law is standing behind the Chafetz Chaim, and her face is blotted out. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, do you know what that message says? That the Chofetz Chaim's wife was a siren and every man is a sex deviant? This is what we are? This is... Alkenya Zavisha, the Vivi Mova, the Vak Bishtova, Yulub Sarachad. The Torah is filled with reality. There are men and women in the world. And one of the challenges of raising a child or raising a student is how we get along, men and women. Are we Weinsteins and Epsteins? Or are we Soloveitchiks and Feinsteins? Vahamevin Yavin. It hurts. It really hurts. It's anti-Torah. Anti-Torah. Today a Talmud sent me a picture in a book that came out of Rav Avadya Yosef. His wife and his daughters, their faces are blotted out. His wife, Rabbanit Margulis, I knew her. One of the daughters is my student, Rivka. It's beyond words, and this is what Torah is about. More than that, Art Scroll has conquered the world. Their works on Talmud and Mishnah, fine, beautiful. Their history books, a disgrace for honesty, intellectual deviation of the highest order. Not to the first power, but to the 100th power. And you raise a generation of dishonesty because it becomes a verdorbenkeit. There is a Mechalel Shabbos today who has a website where there's no God, no Judaism, and it's all because of an incident that happened with me. Very simple. Kid from Asameach Baal Tshuva, very brilliant, started coming to my classes at Gruss. And in my Monday, Sunday, Shas Paiskim Shalach and Shuvit, but Monday, I've been on Hashkafa, Jewish history, now I'm about the 8th year in the history of Torah in the United States. So, this goes back years, I was talking about Agudat Yisrael, may have been my lectures on questions my students have asked me, what my answers were, that was 10 years of lectures on that. So I'm talking about Agudat Yisrael, and I mentioned that the first Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah in America in 1941, Mori Rebbe was a member of the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. So he went back to Har Sameach, and the Rebbe told him, that Rakefet doesn't know what he's talking about, an absolute lie. So the kid came back, and a very bright kid, what are your sources, Rebbe? I said, go to our Pardes, and you'll see. I quote Pardes in the Suvi era, but I can't tell him go to the Suvi era. My book, he'll say, go to Pardes, see where I got it from. So this kid went to the Hebrew University, took out Pardes, went to the periodical room, and he sees Mori Urevi, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. Ultimately, he said, if they lied to me about that, they've lied to me about the entire Torah. And he threw the entire Torah away. And don't think ich ben alemichu. When I found out years later, I emailed him and I said, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater because of one bad experience. I got back a nice email which told me essentially, go fly a kite in China, enjoy yourself, I'll pay for the postage stamp. So this is very bad. You open up the book on Rav Hirsch, open the book on Mr. Mendelovich. There is no mention of the person who turned the tide of Torah in the United States. A book just came out celebrating 100 years of Torah Vedas, a beautiful coffee table book. I cannot even lift it up. I have to ask one of my grandsons to come over the house and lift the book up for me and put it on the table so I can go through it. I'm about into page 300 plus now. You know how Torah began in America? RJJ, 1902. My dear friends, Torah began in America because of one man and one man only, Rabbi Dr. Dov or Bernard Revel. He turned the tide against all odds, gave us Talmudic Academy, gave us Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Kochanan, gave us Yeshiva College. What this man accomplished with all the heartache, he died young, 55 years of age, the burden of carrying the yeshiva through the terrible period of the Depression and then the Hitler period, what a price he paid. His own two sons never married. There is no direct descendant walking the face of the earth. Well, the Ribbon Shalalim privileged me. I came up with the Modot Evel that Torah Vedas published when Rabbi Revel died. When you read this Modot Evel, signed by the Rashei Umenachalei HaYeshiva Torah Vedas VaHamesifta, he's described as the Gadol Hadar, the man who turned the tide in the United States. If that's not enough, there are a lot of wise guys in the world. Rakefet, you made it up. You went to the computer. Today you had to do, fabulous things with the computer. We had a family simcha, and out of the greater family, two people couldn't make the simcha. So a grandson photoshopped them in. You look at the picture, Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a miracle he didn't photoshop in my parents and my wife's parents. Would have been something. So I got hold of a man, and he's still alive. He's sitting 100 years of age. He heard me speak about it this past summer. He's just overwhelmed with joy. Erwin Waxman from West Hempstead. He was a student in Torah Vadas, 1940, December 2nd, Beit Kislev, the outside is tomorrow, when Rabbi Revel died. And I had a student of mine who's a lawyer and an actuary certify this, that this was his testimony. And he talks about the day Rabbi Revel died, Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovich called an assembly of the entire elementary and high school to say the Hillim. He told us that the Gadol Hadar had just passed away. He then picked a total of 24 top Talmidim. Maurice Lamb, Normie Lamb's younger brother, I believe. If you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's the younger one, was among them and told us we were to go to the funeral the next day. He sent along two of the most prominent teachers, Rabbi Avram Pam and Rabbi Nachman Quinn, to accompany us, and all of us were at the funeral. Some Torah Vadas people wrote me, Rabbi Pam was a kohen. Rabbi Pam was a kohen. He stood outside. Ribbono Shel Olam, I didn't say. My dear friends, if anyone questions who began Torah in America, please refer them to these two pages. This does not take away anything from Torah Vadas. Torah Vadas, Chaim Berlin, RJJ, Lakewood, Muncie, Beit Medrash Elyon, whatever you have. But it all stands on the shoulders of this individual. One more. Then I want to say a few words in Yonadi Yoma. Some of you know that some of you know my doctorate was on Bernard Revel. That volume has now gone through four editions, the fourth one being published by the OU. Read the introduction to the fourth volume. You will find out that my whole doctorate was a farce. And the truth is, I got to resubmit my second volume, The Suvi Era, and I'll get my doctorate on that. Well, Dina, you're wondering why it was a farce? Very simple. My parents were born in Harlem. And my mother, I knew my grandparents. I barely had any contact with them. I was too young. Later, after seventh grade, I slowly but surely mastered Yiddish, and then I'm learning around the clock. Unfortunately, I didn't take advantage of grandparents, but my grandparents, the typical American story, came from such great families in Europe, and slowly but surely, outside of my mother, their children totally assimilated the American dream. So my mother always used to hack me a chinik, make a hack the chinik, on her family in Europe, as they frum, as they dust, and this and that. And I listened with one ear, because I always said, what does my mother know about Kovna? She was not Kovna, Kovna, one ear. Many decades later, I'm walking through Geula, and I see a book on Kovna, a memoir book by Yitzchak Ochanan, someone who lived at the time, an old man, but wrote a whole memoir from B'nai Brak. And I look at the book, and I see Revel's picture. So I called my Talmud Chaver at the Hebrew U, Professor Stamfer. We started to talk, who wrote the book, Yitzchak Ochanan in Gibraltar, who is he, Kovna. So he told me, call him, he's alive, he's in B'nai Brak. I called him, because turns out that yours truly, Rabbi Revel, Yitzchak Ochanan in Gibraltar, the Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron, Rav David Cohn, we are all Calvariskis on my mother's side. Gibraltar knew my mother's whole family, and all the stories my mother told me were absolutely correct. And I'm a blood relative of Rabbi Dov Revel. So I wrote my doctorate, 4 editions already, about a man who's my own cousin. Well, can you do a doctorate on your own cousin? Adam Korev Eitzel Atzmo. But there's another part to Rabbi Revel. He didn't do it alone. There's a young lady sitting here looking right at me who's a blood relative to Rabbi Revel's second half, Mrs. Sarah Travis Revel. Rabbi Moshe Bitt, does anyone remember the name from the Bronx, from Brooklyn? Rabbi Moshe Bitt told me many decades ago, the Yesh the Shidduch was mim getan in America, the first real Shidduch made in America was Sarah Travels to Dov Revel. He was living, Rabbi Revel was living with Rabbi Leventhal in Philadelphia. There was a rabbi in Pittsburgh who would go to Marietta, Ohio occasionally, where Sarah Travis lived, and he put them together, and they got married. We're going back to 1909. They got engaged, by the way. Tonight is the anniversary of the engagement, Thanksgiving Day, 1908. They got married, and at that time, Sarah Travis, barely a high school graduate, had a PhD. What does a PhD mean? Papa has dough. Understanding? Understood? Papa has dough. And they're the ones who enabled him to go to New York, not take a salary, build the yeshiva, and they were the main support in the 1910s into the early 20s. The Travis family kept the yeshiva alive and kicking. Unfortunately, due to, you can read about it in Revel, due to illegal practices of Standard Oil, the Travis family went bankrupt, difficulties with their oil business. Later, Rabbi Revel had to take a salary. He took 40%. The contract read for $10,000 a year, and he took $3,600 a year. This was Rabbi Revel. Now, Mrs. Revel survived him by many years, a grand, grand lady. And I was privileged when Bernie Lander, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Lander, assigned this doctorate to me, this dissertation. He called Mrs. Revel. It was her Rebbe's wife, widow at the time. He studied with Rabbi Revel and asked her to help me. And we became very close, shared with me all the documents she had. Malka and I, our little girls, went to visit her. She was a grand lady, a great lady. It's your aunt we're talking about, okay? And you won't believe what happened, Ashgacha Pratit. She wrote a letter in 1964. Here's the letter. There's the stamp. There's the date. Here's the handwriting. Mrs. Revel, the next page we have the printout, the typescript of what she wrote. And she wrote this letter to a very well-known rabbi afterwards, taught at Stern College many years, Rabbi Aaron Ben Sion Shurin. And she writes the letter telling him about this youngster who walked into her life, and he's going to do a doctorate on her husband, and what she thinks of this young man. And I have to tell you, this letter, he got it, he read it, he put it into a file, it was never looked at again. A year and a half ago, when he died, his son and daughter, who happened to be my virtual students, they called him their neighbor, who happens to be my virtual student as well. And they said to him, why don't you look at the archives? And he looks at the archives and he finds a folder marked Bernard Revel. And what's in there? This letter. He pulls it out and he sends it to me. I will not quote the letter to you, but I'll only say to you, when anyone asks me who I got smicha from, I'm a Rosh Kollel, Baruch Hashem, I got smicha, everyone's clamoring, can we ordain women, can't we ordain women? You're looking at a man who got smicha from a lady. Halavai, I should live up to what she wrote about me in that letter. With that being said, I want to go one step further. So what did we do tonight? I apologize, but I'm a Rebbe. I always begin a shiur like the Rav. Was hab mir gesagt letzte Woche. And I always end the shiur, was hab mir gesagt heint. So what did we do today? We spoke about the fourth section of the book, the picture, the Rabbi Volk picture. You can talk endlessly. You have to have a little rachmanis what that man went through. Rabbi Revel, Mrs. Revel, worlds unto themselves. But you know, what did these people accomplish? And I want to quote the Lubavitcher Rebbe. We were kids in the yeshiva in the mid-50s. The Rebbe was first getting publicity. Got to remember, Lubavitch began with a few thousand people, not the hundreds of thousands you talk about today. And the seventh Rebbe, of course, Menachem Mendel, a Shem Tova. So a group of us from YU, we were high school kids, we wanted to go to 770 for a Shabbos, Shabbos Mevorchim, when the Rebbe held up a Brengen. And God have mercy on us when we came back. I think when Reb Neuch Bornstein asked, Nu vi is given Shabbos, and we told him where we were, I think had we told him we'd gone to a Buddhist temple, he would have been happier. But that was the, you know, the way we grew up. And Baruch Hashem, we rose above it. We knew how to take the good and to push aside what was cynical. And we had a fabulous Shabbos. I write about it in Washington, sir. I can't go into it now, but certain things happened that Shabbos influenced my entire life till this very second. And then we came back, Hanukkah, the Yud Tet Kislev Fabrengen, the big Fabrengen, the Geula, the first Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe. And evidently, one of the Gabayim whispered to the Rebbe, there are a bunch of wise Aleks here from YU. So the Rebbe, we thought he was talking right to us. I mean, that's the greatness of the Rebbe. There could be 3,000-4,000 people there, and everyone felt the Rebbe is talking right to me. And the Rebbe, I can remember it like yesterday, Mindarf mentioned the Yebishta, as the Makabim hab nish gewen litvak, and we have our say, can I speak in Yiddish or I have to translate? Okay. So it's hard to me because I'm living it in Yiddish. I speak three languages, all with a Bronx accent. But I dream in three languages according to the way it happened to me. So the Rebbe says, let's imagine, give me a Beispiel, I'll give you an example. The Litvakin come in to the Beis HaMikdash, it's all destroyed, and they find one cruse of oil that has a seal on it, that's still Tahar. Well, you're not going to light candles. It's going to take 7 days till we get more oil. And the halacha is, once you light the candles, it has to be eternal, tamid, ongoing. And the Rishayim already explained it took 3 weeks to get up to the Galil. You know, can't be Mechal Shabbos for it. And 3 days, three days up, 1 day Shabbos, 3 days back. No. A Litvak would say, Aynis Rachmana Patre. If you can't do it, it's impossible for humans. God forgives you. We'll wait. Let's wait. The 8th day, we'll get it all. We'll light. We'll start and it will continue. No. There would have never been a Hanukkah. But the Hasidim came in, the Maccabim were Hasidim, mitzvah haba liyadcha, nu, al takmitzena. You have a chance to do a mitzvah, you're not going to do it right away. It doesn't make sense. We got to do the maximum. What doesn't make sense for us, God will finish out. And that's why we have a Hanukkah. When we talk about these people, Rabbi Revel, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Shrabka Feigelman, the Lubitsch, the whole, I'd love one day to give a talk on Rav Aaron Kotler, etc. These people went against all odds. Logically, who would believe what became of America? Who would believe that the President of the United States has something that 3 million Jews do not have grandchildren who are Shomer Shabbos kids. Just think for a minute. Who would believe that the New York Times has to write about Kashrut and Shabbat and with a little bit respect? Who would believe that the most famous spiritual leaders in the world, they talk about spirituality? It's our Rabbanim. Who would believe what Lubavitch is today? These people were a fabulous example for us. And I go back to 50 years ago in Israel. I was just interviewed. They recorded me what it was like. BMT, Beis Medrash LaTorah, the first school to export Torah to the Anglo world, began 50 years ago. I'm the only surviving faculty member. And among the students, we had 10 students. I hope 6 or 7. There's one student here from the original 10. Some of them are gone. You know who's gone. By the way, I'm teaching his great nephew today. Is my shir, a wonderful student, Elchanan. If anyone would have told us back in 69, what you're doing here is going to change Anglo-Torah Jewry. Hundreds of thousands will wind up coming to study, and tens of thousands will stay and have many. God, what? We would have said you're crazy. But we were Hasidim. We lit the candles. What fabulous results. And now finally, bring it home. I'm allowed to talk about it. The security clause was lifted. I have two heavy security clauses in my life here. One is from the Mossad and one is from the IDF. The IDF clause I can talk partially, but not the entire story, but we'll leave that for another time. When the Mossad contacted us May of 1980, and I said yes. Well, some other time I'll tell you why I said yes. I figured it was a student calling me to tell me the sins they're doing, but they don't want to reveal their name. I've had plenty of calls like that. They think I'm a pope, a Catholic. I can tell them to say some Hail Marys and they can do whatever the heck they want. I said yes. And a man got on the phone who becomes the second most important person in my life, next to Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, Aryeh Kroll, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And Aryeh Kroll, Harav Rakefet, Anachnu Yodim Shecha Yodei Eich Lelameid Gemara. We know you how to teach Gemara. Ata Muchan Lelameid B'Moskva? And of course, any normal person would have said no. But my wife constantly said to me, because we knew people going from America, said, you don't have any guts. If you ever got a call, go to teach in Russia, you'd be too frightened to say yes. So I figured, I'm going to show her. And I said yes. And as they say, the rest is history. To come out of Russia, to be there so many times, to send over 200 people to take the responsibility for the study of Talmud in the refusnik world, until the Iron Curtain fell. We lived a dual existence. No one knew what we were doing. We lived the normal one and we lived the secret one. It was an unbelievable achievement. But when the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you an achievement like that, you have to show your thanks. So already when we came back the first time in 1981, February, I helped organize an outreach center for Russian Jews, Shvut Ami, taking the same concept of BMT, teach Torah to Americans in English. You have to reach their native language, their heart, their inner being. And we said, we got to teach Russians, we have a big job to do, but it has to be in Russian. And we began, and the success stories are unbelievable. And this is why I've given all my scholarship to Shvut Ami. You'll notice their dedications here. It brought in some substantial money. And later this year, last year, some of you were in my class. You're sitting here. You can testify, among other things. So a lot is going on in Russia, etc. A lot went on here in the past. We brought students over from Russia to experience Israel. Russians to Russians, outside of my talk in English, which was translated by students of mine into Russian for them. This year we hope to bring over married couples from Odessa and show them Israel. I need not tell you what the results will be, Be'ezrat Hashem. We won't succeed with everyone, but everyone will be elevated in their belief. Some, and we know many, have settled here, lekavod ulatiferet. So this is the story of Shvat Ami, and I'll say it very simply. Let me end off. We have problems today with a Jew named Lieberman. Can anyone give me his Russian name?
Yvette.
What is it?
Yvette.
Yvette Lieberman. Our challenge is to turn Yvette into a Victor. I want to introduce to you the executive director of Shvat Ami, my dear student, Alan Rosen. Thank you,
Rabbi Rekha, for the lecture. I'm Alan Rosen. I'm the administrative director of Shvat Ami. In 2 minutes, we're going to have a book signing for those who would like. I just want to say something very personal that you know, Rabbi Rekha gives shir every Sunday and Monday morning, and people all over the world hear it. But I think this is a very unique opportunity that we're sitting in Jerusalem in the evening and we get to hear Rabbi Rekha. Yeah. And I think it's something we remember for years and years that we were here, and you know, this is a unique opportunity. We have the privilege today of hearing from a respected Torah scholar, a prolific author, and a beloved master teacher who has inspired and educated many thousands of students during his 60 years in the field. I'm sure I speak for everyone and wish him and his Eshet Chayil Malka many more years of good health. They should be able to continue traveling, writing, and spreading Torah for many years to come. Rabbi Kevin and Malkin said a long time ago that they would do everything they could to help the Jews that everyone has forgotten about, the hundreds of thousands of unaffiliated Jews who are still living in the former Soviet Union. And towards that end, Rabbi Kevin was instrumental in becoming a founding board member of Shvat Ami. Since then, he has spent countless hours traveling with Malka, lecturing and raising awareness and funding for Shvat Ami's critical work, inspiring young Russian Jews to marry Jewish and live Jewish lives. Right now, there's an opportunity to become a partner with Rabbi Rekha in this great tzedakah work by making a generous donation to his cause, to Shvat Ami. Every amount is appreciated. Every amount will receive a full tax receipt. As some of you know, Rabbi Rekha has written and published 9 very popular volumes so far. I hope there will be many more to come. 5 out of 9 of these volumes are available in bookstores online. I know some of you wanted one of those books and it's not here. 5 out of 9. But there's a 4-volume set over there. There's actually 3 volumes, number 4 is sort of out of print, called Rekhavot Aron. It's not available in any store or anywhere online. You can't buy these books anywhere. Go on the Black Friday sales, they won't be there. And the reason for that is they were written by Rabbi Rekha specifically to be used as thank you gifts for people who help him to help Russian Jews by donating to Shvat Ami. Anyone who makes a donation of 150 shekels to Shvat Ami today will receive any one of these 3 books as a token of appreciation from Rabbi Rekha, and he will sign it outside as a thank you gift to you. And there's also 2 other books in the prices are accordingly according to the list. If anyone really, really wants the first volume, leave me a note, we'll see what we can do. Okay, and I want you to know that Rabbi Rekha is not taking even one penny for himself. He's donating 100% of the proceeds to Shvat Ami. I mention that because often as you see the author of 4 books who spent years working on them, literally years, donating every penny of the proceeds to tzedakah. I think this is something very special, so I hope you'll take advantage. And again, even if you don't want to take a book home, any donation to me would greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much for your support. Have a great day. Thank you.